Welcome to Open Your Eyes, a podcast about empowering each of us with the perspective and tools to grow and change. I hope as you join this podcast today that your life and family are doing well and prospering. Thank you for your messages and feedback about Open Your Eyes. We love hearing from you, and we hope that this podcast helps you find a few insights and a bit more hope to live a happier life. You know, it's our firm belief that a powerful way to live a happier life is to open your eyes to new ways of seeing life. So, hopefully, this podcast will give you a bit of a new perspective today of how you can think and live better. And when you're done listening to this podcast, share it with a friend. It just may be what they need in their life today. Let's get started. Today, I'd like to give you a challenge to take a test for 1 month to become more happy. Laurie was born in 1975 in New Bedford, Massachusetts. Her father, an immigrant, was an IT programmer, and her mother, a U.S. citizen, was a counselor at a local high school. Laurie did amazingly well in high school, no doubt to her mother's example, and after high school, was admitted to Harvard University. There, she earned her master's in psychology. In 2003, she started as an assistant professor at Yale University. And years later, she started a course titled Psychology and the Good Life. In that course, her students learn what actually makes us happy and what we can do to be happy. Her course has become the most popular class at Yale, with 25% of all students taking the course. Now, Yale has made it available externally online with over 170,000 people from at least 170 different countries enrolling in the online course. As part of the course, students accept a 28-day challenge. It's called the Happiness Challenge, and it includes a series of activities based on concepts scientifically proven to boost happiness. And learning about this got me to thinking, what about a test? A simple 1 month test to really try to do what makes us happy. Why 1 month? So you and I have time to implement the proven actions that can bring greater happiness into our life without time pressure to do something quickly. So if you're willing, this podcast will outline a few things you can do and try in a 1 month test to be happier. Now, we may borrow one or two things from the Psychology of Good Life course at Yale, but generally, the things we will talk about will come from a variety of research and sources. Their suggestions and definitely do not include everything that can bring happiness into your life, but for sure, the concept, the 1 month test of living happy, is something that we all can do. I did it, and for me, it made a huge difference in my life. Let me give you an example. One suggestion to put to work in the 1 month happiness test is the talent of savoring. Savoring is the deliberate post-activity act of looking back on what you've done and taking time to appreciate it. Well, after learning about the 1 month test, I started purposefully savoring. For example, each week I get the blessing to babysit two of my grandchildren on Wednesday nights while my daughter works. And I decided to come prepared for my 2 hours with my granddaughters each week. We ride bikes, we jump on the tramp, we do crafts, we decorate cookies, we sing, we read stories, laugh, and say prayers before bed. You'd be surprised at the richness it's brought into my life as a result. But the key thing is when I'm done, I have a 30-minute drive home. As I got started with these Wednesday nights, one night I took time after I left to savor. I reflected on the things that my grandkids and I did. I purposefully talked to myself about how grateful I was for the time together. I reflected on the joy I felt and how I appreciated the opportunity, how lucky I was to have it in my life. And this act of savoring each week has spilled over into other areas of my life. And the peace and joy it has brought me has been remarkable. I notice that after work, I get into my car now, and out of habit, I start savoring what happened at work. This savoring habit has spilled over, and I notice I'm grateful more and more in my life. I have more peace. It's interesting that I noticed an improvement in my mood and overall disposition about the second or third time that I tried savoring. Now, my wife has always been a savorer, a person that savors these types of experiences in her life. In my past, I've been a do-it-and-get-it-done person, but she has been a person who savors. She has a scrapbook room where she escapes to organize photos and memories of things. And to be honest, I didn't fully understand her passion for doing this until I started this savoring habit in my life. Now I see that she relives her savoring moments, and I know why she's so happy. Okay, here's lesson number one. We're wired to believe that happiness comes from big stuff. A better job, the perfect relationship, a dream vacation, or finally paying off debt, or moving into a dream home. And while these things can matter, the strange truth is, from decades of psychology research, that most people return to their baseline level of happiness after these major life events. This phenomenon is called the hedonic treadmill. You get the raise, move into a better apartment, or fall in love, and then your brain normalizes it. And within weeks or months, you return to your usual emotional level. And here's the surprising part. Tiny, regular changes to your daily life often make a bigger, longer-lasting difference than these big things. These simple changes, purposefully done, make a huge difference. Here's a few real-life examples. Derek thought he hated commuting. The traffic, the repetition, the feeling of wasted time all made him grumpy before 9 o'clock in the morning. Then, one morning, he randomly played an old comedy podcast that someone had recommended months earlier. He laughed in his car. He started listening daily, and over the next few weeks, his entire morning mood had changed. He didn't change jobs, he didn't move closer, he didn't buy a new house. He just added a source of joy to something routine. "I get stuck in traffic," he said, "but I don't hate it anymore. I even kind of look forward to it." That's pretty crazy, isn't it? Marcia was newly retired and struggling with restlessness and boredom. She'd spent her life busy, useful, surrounded by people, and suddenly her days felt empty. A friend casually mentioned how a morning walk helped her feel more energized, so Marcia decided to walk around the block before breakfast. She did it again the next day, and the next. Soon she was walking a little bit longer, and she noticed she was in a better mood before 9 a.m. "It's not just the exercise," she said. "It's seeing the neighborhood, hearing the birds, feeling awake. It all made me feel like I was happy. It made my day feel like mine again." Here's another example. Working in a busy restaurant can be chaotic. Alyssa, a server, juggling grad school, often ended her shifts drained and frustrated. But after reading about gratitude's impact on happiness, she made one tiny commitment. She'd say one genuine thank you to a coworker every shift. "It started as kind of a personal challenge," she said, "but it made the vibe better. People noticed." And the unexpected result? She started noticing things to be grateful for: a coworker covering a table, a manager giving her a heads up, a customer who smiled. Gratitude made her job feel less like survival and more like something she was part of. Now, these examples aren't miracles. They're micro adjustments in their lives. None of these people overhauled their lives. They didn't relocate to Bali or double their income. What they did was find a point of leverage, something already in their life, and shift it just enough to spark a new feeling. That's what this one-month experiment is about. Not doing everything, not doing things perfectly, just noticing, making adjustments, and trying them for 30 days. So, let's see what we can do for 1 month, bring more happiness into our life. Now, here's something important to remember. Your brain is built to scan for problems. It's an evolutionary survival tool. Long ago, the people who paid attention to threats, snakes, strangers, storms, were the ones who lived long enough to pass on their genes. The result? Even today, your mind, your DNA, tells you to focus on what's wrong rather than what's right. And by the way, this described me perfectly. I look for what's wrong with my team or myself or even my life. Maybe you do the same thing. But here's the interesting part. You can change what you focus on, and it will help you be more happy. You can choose what you pay attention to. This is called selective attention. It's a real observable brain process. What you notice becomes your reality, at least for that moment. And moment by moment, that becomes your day. I'll give you a simple example. I have a fine and good man that I work with. And I'll admit, when I first started working with him, that I paid attention to the things that he didn't do, that I was used to seeing from people in his position. He didn't speak or act like them. As I paid attention to these things, we never really connected. But then, as I learned about this happiness test, I started paying attention to who he was and chose to focus my attention on what was good about him. Soon, he started to change his behavior. I think he saw the reaction in me, and he improved in so many areas. Our relationship has become positive, and now I admire so many things about him. All of that changed because of what I chose to focus on. This selective attention, where we select to place our attention, may be the most important part of your one-month test. Choose one person or thing in your life, perhaps where you struggle, where you feel a bit of negativity or frustration, and select where you will place your attention. Remember, you get to choose what you'll focus on. So this month, to test your happiness, focus on the good in others or your circumstances or yourself. Completely take away your attention on the mistakes or shortcomings. You can deal with those next month. This month, focus your attention on the good. That means what you see, what you say, and what you choose to notice will be on the good things. This month, when you start interacting with a child or friend or member of your team, and you're tempted to focus your attention on the things that annoy or bother you, focus instead on what's good or fun or helpful about them. Let go of everything else. And when you're tempted to focus on the bad of your circumstances, choose instead to find the good. You know, for years, I worked overseas, and this meant numerous flights and days away from home. The thought of leaving town again and getting on a cramped, smelly airplane and trying to adjust to new time zones was so depressing to me. I remember I would get on the airplane to leave, and as it lifted off the runway, I would sink into sadness, wondering why I was traveling again and looking at the bad side of almost everything. And this sadness sinked into my psyche, and my meetings and my interactions were not as good with people that I was leading overseas because of my sadness. Then, one day, things changed for me. While I still hated leaving my family, when the plane left the runway, I chose to think of the things I could do to serve the team members overseas, how I could give to them, the ways I could grow as a person, and my time spent was so much happier. I slept better, I had more drive, and I was a much better leader. So for your one-month happiness test, choose where you will place your focus and think of one good thing in your circumstances or people and put it to the test. Next, for your one-month test, practice gratitude. You know, for years, I worked with a controller in my company. Each morning, we would park next to each other in the same parking lot, and many mornings, we would walk from the parking lot into the office. Each morning, I'd ask him, "How are you?" or "How are things?" And his reply was always the same. He would say, "I'm so lucky to be working here," or "I'm so happy to walk to work with you," or "I'm so lucky to live in this beautiful part of the country." At first, I thought he was fake, honestly, in his optimism. But I soon learned that he was genuinely a grateful person. He'd chosen to be this way. Here I was, walking into the same job, the same office, and thinking of all the things that needed to change or reasons why I was tired. And he saw things entirely differently. Gratitude is a choice, and it brings happiness. When I was younger, a friend of mine told me he took a single word and would focus on that word for a year. Think, work, learn all he could about that word. He took his list of words from Scripture, and in particular, a Scripture found in Peter, which says that we're given great promises to assume the same qualities of God, namely diligence, virtue, knowledge, temperance, patience, godliness, brotherly kindness, charity. And he would study everything about that word for a year and try and make that a quality he possessed. You could tell he was a man who had internalized many of these qualities. Likewise, at one point in his life, Benjamin Franklin set out to practice and acquire moral virtues. He wrote, "It was about this time I conceived the bold and arduous project of arriving at moral perfection, as I knew, or thought I knew, what was right and wrong. I didn't see why I might always do one and avoid the other." So Franklin makes a list of 12 words that needed improvement. The 27-year-old Philadelphian asked a friend to look over his list. Franklin's list included temperance, silence, order, resolution, frugality, industry, sincerity, justice, moderation, cleanliness, tranquility, and chastity. His friend would later tell Franklin something that awakened the need for a 13th virtue. Franklin wrote in his autobiography that his friend kindly informed me that I was generally thought proud, that my pride showed itself frequently in conversation, so humility became his 13th virtue. Now, the practice of focusing on one word or one thing isn't new, but it has power to bring a fresh sense of feeling and purpose in your life. And I think that one word that has the power to make us happy is gratitude. Grateful people are usually happy people. So this month, as you begin each day, start that day with thinking or writing what you're grateful for. Maybe you can make a list. It is a habit of happiness. You know, recently my daughter's gone through some challenges, and each time I talk to her, I'm expecting her to tell me all the reasons she's sad. However, she does exactly the opposite. She tells me what she's learning, how she's focusing on the good things in life, and how grateful she is for what she's learning. As the author said, gratitude turns what we have into enough. And when we express gratitude to others, we bring happiness to them as well. Another author said, "God gave you 86,400 seconds today. Have you used one to say thank you?" One author, trying to be grateful for all things, said, "I'm just thankful for the people that never left me, and equally thankful for those that did." So, in your one-month test, try to identify something you're grateful for each day. Next, I mentioned the impact of savoring and what it can do for happiness in our life. Consider what a difference it makes when we say, to a bite of a delicious meal. We might miss the enjoyment were it not for the, So it is with life. Savoring is a practice of reflecting back on a past moment or a current one and letting yourself be absorbed in the experience and saying, to your life. You know, psychologists have found that savoring deepens our sense of enjoyment, our well-being, and it definitely bolsters positive moods. Psychologists Fred Bryant and Joseph Baruff identified three practices to savoring. First, anticipatory, thinking ahead of an upcoming event and beginning to imagine the people you'll see or what the place may be like, and letting the excitement and positive feelings associated with it fill you on the inside. Next, it could be in the moment, meaning stepping back from what's happening in front of you, the family at dinner or the line at the grocery store or the feel of the crisp cold air outside, and just noticing it for a second. The next is reminiscent, where you go back to a positive event from the past and let your mind trace over the moment and the experience you enjoyed. Okay, moving on to the next part of our one-month test. Try acts of kindness. They don't have to be big. They can be small. They can be verbal actions or even thoughtful gifts, but being a giver of kindness does, in fact, boost your confidence. Years ago, I moved with my family to a new city. I was quietly suffering. I had a few friends. I didn't feel at home, and I wasn't really happy. I didn't know what to do to turn my feelings around, but one Sunday morning, my wife, at the suggestion of a friend, took me to visit a homeless shelter in the poorest part of the city. We got to the church where the shelter was and served a few meals and cleaned up after they fed the masses of homeless people. Well, I felt so at home in the process. So the next week, by myself, because my wife was busy, I went again. This time I showed up early, went to the grill where they were grilling hamburgers and cooking vegetables and preparing other hot food. The team was shorthanded that day, and it started a 2-year experience for me. Every week I went. Sometimes they didn't need my help as much, but I was always happy to be there. Kind service has this magic feel to it, and research shows that it's true. In a recent research publication, researchers examined the relationship between kindness and happiness. And in the study, hundreds of participants were measured on their level of happiness and also reported, among other things, the number and type of kind acts they performed each day during the test period. Not surprisingly, those reporting the highest number of kind acts were also those with the highest happiness scores. In another study, participants were graded on their levels of happiness. Then, for a period of time, they were asked to count their acts of kindness each day. After the test period, their levels of happiness were again scored. This time, the levels of happiness had improved just because they reported acts of kindness. One day a few years ago, I remember reading the news, which had the following story. One morning in August, at the drive-thru window of a Starbucks in St. Petersburg, Florida, a customer paid for her order and then picked up the tab for the stranger in the car behind her. That customer then paid for the bill for the customer behind them, and so on for the next 330 customers in a 3-hour sequence of spontaneous generosity. And I am sure that most of those people had a happier day as a result. One woman who took the 28-day Yale Happiness Class Challenge reported that she tried more kindness by making her husband's favorite recipe to cheer him up, or taking care of the plants so that her husband didn't have to worry about them, or talking with one of her closest friends about their problems, even though she was extremely busy, or buying a grocery bag for a stranger who really needed it. And as a result, her happiness scores for the test period were significantly higher. So, during your month test, give kindness a try and just see if you're not more happy. Next, during your test month, try a few ways to increase your social connections. Invite friends to dinner, go to a social event that you may not be planning to attend, or go to church, or visit someone you haven't seen in a while. Just try a few ways to socially connect with a few new or different people. You might strike up a few more conversations with acquaintances at the gym, or be more active in a friends group, or go to lunch with a friend you haven't seen in a while, or organize a fun outing with friends. Research overwhelmingly supports the idea that social connections are strongly linked to increased happiness. Studies have consistently shown that individuals with strong social ties, including those with family, friends, and community members, tend to be happier and healthier. These connections aren't just beneficial for emotional well-being, but also physical health. And some studies showed that socially connected individuals actually live longer. You know, in the groundbreaking 80-year study done by Harvard University that followed people for a lifetime, the study reported close relationships, more than money or fame, are what kept people happy throughout their lives. Those ties protected people from life's discontents. It helped them delay mental and physical decline. And this, these social connections, were better predictors of a long and happy life than other things like social class or IQ or even genes. In that study, social connections proved to be the primary factor for a happy life, regardless of things like demographics, income, or other factors. Next, We won't go into great detail here, but research clearly shows that exercise and sleep have a huge impact on our happiness. The benefits of daily exercise, even taking a walk, on our mental well-being far outweigh the physical benefits. Now, I exercise in the mornings, but years ago, I started the habit of taking a 30-minute walk in the evenings. I walk with my wife and talk, or when I'm alone, I listen to a podcast. And it sets my body and my mind right. Most of all, I sleep so much better. And research shows that people who exercise sleep better, and those who sleep better have a better mood each day. A study recently reported in the National Library of Medicine reported that people who exercise reported a significantly higher level of life satisfaction and propensity to do other activities that made them happy. So, think about your next month. What if you tried to savor experiences a bit better? You chose where to place your attention when dealing with people or your circumstances. You were more grateful. You did more small acts of kindness. You exercised and just tried a few of these simple things and tested whether you become more happy. I think you'll find that you will. Isn't it worth 1 month's effort? Try it and watch. You will be more happy in who you are and what you do. Most of all, thanks for being here today. And don't forget to share this podcast with a friend and join us next week for another podcast as we learn to open our eyes to who and what we can become.